Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. My name is Keith Caulfield, and I am a co-director of charts at Billboard, based in Los Angeles. If you've been listening for the past few weeks, you know that my regular co-host, Jason Lipschitz, is not on the other line, normally in New York. He's still on vacation. Some would say it's a permanent vacation. But he'll soon be back, I think even next week at the earliest, in his place, and has done a wonderful job, I have to say, the past few weeks under duress, is Katie Atkinson. Hello, Katie!
Hi! Yeah, Keith is totally forcing me to be here. No, actually, this has been awesome, and I like keeping Jason's seat warm until he gets back.
Hey, you never know. You might get rooked into doing this every week from now on.
I don't think Jason would care for that.
Oh, you never know. You never know. On this week's show, we are going to discuss Ryan Adams' new Taylor Swift cover album, 1989, how Drake and Future are heading for a big number one debut with their new surprise album, plus The Weeknd replaces himself at number one on the Billboard Hot 100. We're also going to recap briefly our experience at the iHeartRadio Music Festival. Both Katie and I were there backstage, and good Lord, we talked to so many people. And in addition to all of that, we have an interview with Duran Duran. I talked to them at iHeart, and we played our famed, or not so famed, Fishbowl Q&A game. It was a hoot. So yeah, we've got all of that stuff. But first, before we get to that, we've got some housekeeping stuff, as we always do. If you enjoy the podcast, please subscribe to the show on iTunes so you won't miss an episode, and give us a rating or review us while you're at it. If you have any questions, you can tweet me at @Keith_Caulfield. And of course, you can also tweet Jason, but you know, he's not here. If you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit iTunes.com/Billboard Podcasts. Woo, that is like the shortest preamble than ever before.
I'm just got like, it all in.
I'm just barreling through this week. So first thing, we're going to talk about the new Ryan Adams album, which is called 1989. You may have heard of another album called 1989 by Taylor Swift.
This is not a coincidence.
Not a coincidence, because this album is a cover album. All the tracks from 1989 from Taylor Swift are covered faithfully, I suppose. This is the word.
Some of them.
By Ryan Adams. I have to say, I'm not a huge Ryan Adams aficionado, but I felt that it was important that we should talk about this because, you know, it's really unique and interesting for a huge number one album to be covered by another artist in such a fashion, and also have the artist, Taylor Swift, endorse it so wholeheartedly.
Yeah. Yep.
Taylor's been tweeting up a storm. And so Ryan Adams' 1989 album came out, I guess...
At midnight.
Midnight.
Yeah, on Monday, or I guess Sunday night, depending on how you're looking at it.
So Sunday night on the, I guess, the 20th, I think, is the date. I could be wrong.
Today's the 21st, but it was like on the cusp of between the 20th and the 21st.
Right.
Or I should say Monday's the 21st.
Late in the evening on the 20th, or maybe midnight, anyway, around there. I listened to the album, and Katie listened to the album.
I downloaded this album the second it was available.
You're also a big Ryan Adams geek.
I love Ryan Adams. Okay. I love Taylor Swift. So this is just a magical combination in my book. Hmm. And I totally understand why Taylor is endorsing it so wholeheartedly, because it gives her this, like, you know, this like singer-songwriter who's so respected.
And who she admires.
And who she totally admires. Yeah. Likes her music and her lyrics enough to cover them. It's like the biggest feather in her cap, and she has a lot of feathers in her cap.
I mean, it looks like it's like a Janis Joplin like boa, or maybe like a Steven Tyler scarf.
Yeah, she's
stand.
Dragging a boa behind her of feathers.
Yes.
In her cap.
Yes, there are so many feathers.
And so it's just like it just says so much about how she is, as who she is rather, as a songwriter. And it's also interesting to me because Ryan Adams is often described as like an alt country kind of guy.
Right.
That it's almost like this weird full circle moment where her music has come back to being country again.
After she made such a big deal about how 1989 was a pop album.
Exactly.
And said, this is my first pop album.
And all of a sudden these songs have been interpreted in this, you know, pseudo-country vein.
As a country. I mean, you listen to it, you're like, oh, it's like country-ish rock.
Yes. And if you look at her last album, Red, I mean, a lot of it was these kind of slower, you know, ballads. Like, there were the poppy songs, but then there was a lot of, like, really emotional, confessional ballad-type songs. And it's like Ryan Adams turned 1989 into like Red Part 2.
this is what 1989 could have been if it were if meant to be a country.
If she was still, identifying as country.
Wow.
Yes.
Let's talk about some of our favorite songs. We don't have to like spend a whole lot of time on this.
Don't we?
Don't we?
The Pop Shop Podcast is all just Ryan Adams 1989.
This is the Ryan Adams podcast.
Really hijacking this thing.
I think four songs that stick out to me. Three of them I really thought were cool. I've listened to the Taylor Swift album, but I haven't listened to it like repeatedly. To be
like
perfectly honest.
Me.
Right.
Like I have.
So when I listen to Ryan Adams versions, certain songs I'm like, oh, wow, this is really slow or different. And then I went back to the Taylor album like, oh, my God. He like re-envisioned it. So,
right.
For example, All You Had to Do Was Stay.
Mm-hmm.
It's very night and day between the two of
them. Oh, yeah.
And I thought his version was really cool.
Yeah.
I mean, they're both good, obviously.
They're just totally different.
Totally different.
Yeah, that's definitely a place where he really reinvented it.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, and I think it really works.
Yeah,
as,
me too.
Like, it almost kind of works better in
Let's
a way.
Let's not get crazy.
Okay. She's just pulled out a bat. I thought his version of Shake It Off was really cool.
I thought it was too, and I that was the one that I was most curious to hear because the lyrics are really poppy too, and they're,
yeah.
and they're pretty girly too.
Yeah.
And so to hear this like, you know, serious guy sing it, but the way he interpreted it was good. He made it a little less silly,
right.
basically.
Right. And I really liked Wildest Dreams.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, and I mean, because that kind of works already because it has this kind of like loungy, Lana Del Rey-ish, kind of like alt-y sort of moody vibe, which kind of lends itself to becoming sort of transforming into a Ryan Adams type tune.
Well, and then we talked about this a little already, but Wildest Dreams is the one where it has the most obvious pronoun changing.
Right.
As far as like him changing he to she to he, and you know, not talking about him wearing a dress
right.
on the beach.
Him like wearing a long flowy dress.
Exactly. But I that was actually the one where maybe I'm just like so, you know, used to the Taylor version that it was hard for me to get past that. But I almost wanted him to just sing it straight as if he were singing like from the perspective of a woman, like you know, reading a diary entry or something, as opposed to like it being about him,
right?
And so that was the clunkiest pronoun changing for me, but the song itself sounded amazing.
Yeah. I thought, let's see, other thoughts I had. Oh, I actually, what I wanted to say about All You Had to Do Was Stay, when I listened to it, it made me think of like 1980s Jackson Browne.
Oh,
because it sounded really 80s.
Yeah,
which is. It's interesting because this whole thing, this album was supposed to be kind of like 80s inspired.
Right.
And I didn't really hear 80s when I heard All You Had to Do Was Stay originally.
Yeah, yeah.
But in Ryan Adams' version, there's sonic that make me think of like, it just made me think of Jackson Browne, like 80s. It made me think of specifically Somebody's Baby for some reason from Fast Times at Ridgemont High. I don't know why.
Love that song, by the way.
I'm not like a Jackson Browne like expert, but it just evoked that spirit, which I thought was fun because the album was supposed to be kind of 80s inspired.
Totally.
So
it's like a different type of 80s.
A different type of 80s.
Yeah.
And it's like 80s country rock-ish,
mm-hmm.
not really.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the songs that stuck out to me. Were there any particular tracks that you really loved?
The most surprising one for me was his version of That's How You Get the Girl, because this is my least favorite song on Taylor's album. Mm. If I had to pick one song that like I don't want to listen to on repeat when I'm listening to 1989 over and over again, it's that song. And he turned it into this like really like moody song, and it's like it made the lyrics take whole new meaning. And the reason I don't like it on the Taylor album is because it's like real cheesy, like upbeat, boppy, and it just doesn't fit with everything else. And he turned it into this like amazing song without changing a word, you know. And it's, and actually I listened to the interview that he did with Taylor Swift right when the album came out on Beats One, and she said that was one of her two favorite songs on his version as well. Mm. That one and Blank Space. Those were her two favorites.
I think it would have been interesting to hear like what the negotiations were like to actually make this album happen.
Honestly, with any other artist, I think it might have been challenging, if not impossible. And maybe somebody else has tried for all we know.
Right.
But like with Ryan Adams, who she's loved forever, I think she probably heard like Ryan Adams wants to cover my album.
Yeah.
Done. Yeah. Like, sold. In.
There's a certain amount of irony that this album, I listened to this album on Spotify.
There is some irony there.
And it's available on Spotify. However, Taylor's album called 1989 is not on Spotify. I think the moral of all this, and then we can move on. The moral of all this is that when you write a great song and you know it's a good song or a great song when you can sort of strip away everything and rebuild it and it still sounds cool. And
totally.
It still sounds good. And you can take something like, you know, a dancey song like Can't Get You Out of My Head by Kylie Minogue and strip it down and turn it into an acoustic ballad. It's like, you know, I can't get you out of my head.
Oh, it'd be amazing.
Girl, your love is all I think about. So yeah, I mean, I and this album, you know, since we do talk about charts each week, this album could do well. It's not going to be like number one so far,
but it'll probably be pretty amazing for Ryan Adams.
Yeah, it could be like maybe in the top 10 on the Billboard 200.
Right, right.
I think Ryan Adams has had a top 10 album before, but obviously this is a very sexy look.
Yeah.
And certainly is kind of like a buzzworthy water cooler moment. And also, I wonder. If 1989 by Taylor Swift is nominated for Album of the Year at the Grammy Awards, can Ryan Adams also get a nomination for, say, like, Best Rock Album for his 1989 album?
Oh, my God. That would be... And then we're talking about, like, the first time that
the same group of songs by two different artists with the same named album. Oh, my God. Mind blown! Mind blown! Oh, Lord. I'm just looking at the time. I don't know why I'm looking at the time, because I'm timing myself, because we're freaking out.
we have to talk about what other albums or artists could do the same thing.
Oh, right. Oh, goody. Goody, goody, goody.
I know you had some good ideas.
I did, actually. Well, actually, the first question was, thank you for putting me back on track, Katie.
Of course.
We're so discombobulated today, to be perfectly honest. Like, we're all still, like, in a weird zombified hangover state from iHeart, because we've been, like, working all weekend. We'll talk more about that in a little bit. But if I sound like I'm crazy, that's the reason why. I want to know, if Taylor Swift did this for another artist's album, who do you think... And I did not prep Katie for this.
No, this is a surprising question.
Sorry, I surprised you. Like, if Taylor Swift did it, like, she really respects, like, so many artists. Like, she loves, like, Jackson Brown. We talked about him. You know, or she loves James Taylor and you know, probably loves Joni Mitchell,
this
too.
This is really hard for me to think about because when I think of Taylor, I think so much about, like, her singing her lyrics.
Right.
Like, to me, it's that's so identified the kind of with artist her. That she is. Like, the value of Taylor, in my mind, is hearing her, like, diary of lyrics.
Right. So you don't want to hear her doing someone
kind
else.
Kind of. I mean, like, I think that she would say that
kind
herself.
Kind of. And also, that's a way for you not
I mean,
to answer
it. She never
it.
Does covers when you think about it. Like, she'll do it on tour once in a while, but she doesn't do them on her albums.
But she does a cover every night when she brings a guest artist out.
Definitely. But she pretty much just lets them sing their song and she joins in a little bit.
So you don't want to hear her have her covering the Fifth Harmony, like, album Reflection.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to turn that down. Right. I would want to hear what that sounded like.
I would love to hear Taylor Swift doing Sledgehammer by Fifth Harmony. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Well, I thought of some ideas for just a few of sort of key, like, landmark albums as covered by someone else. So I thought maybe Adele's 21 could be covered by Jack White.
Oh, yep.
That's interesting.
Yes,
Jack
it's
White
very
doing
interesting.
Like sort of like a rock, like sort of stripped down version of Rolling in the Deep.
Oh yeah.
Like turns it into like a guitar, like sort of like
blues,
like bluesy yeah. distortion, Rolling mm-hmm. in the Deep.
100%.
Like the sentiment of the song would still really work.
Yep. And I co-sign this.
And the whole album is so emotional, anyways. I think it would work.
Actually, Rolling in the Deep's the one that he probably would have to change the least because I feel like it almost has that rock blues thing going. Like,
yeah.
In its production.
True.
Yeah. Yeah.
Another one I had, I thought the Rolling Stones' Exile on Main Street
mm-hmm.
could maybe be done by, say, Aretha Franklin.
Oh,
like yep. Aretha Franklin doing Tumble and Dice?
I'm in.
That'd be cool.
Okay.
All right.
Two for two.
All right. All right. Now, Janet Jackson's Control album.
Okay.
You're like, okay.
Yes.
Because it was like this sort of, it was a statement album about how she was an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And how she had, like, was no longer a teenager anymore, controlled
mm-hmm.
by her parents.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that would work with, say, an act that was also growing, like, say, Shawn Mendes.
Oh, I was going to say Justin Bieber when you, like, I thought you were prompting me to get toward Bieber there.
Well, I, for some reason, when I hear the song Control, the title track, I hear it, like, with a
strummy,
like, and I just see, like, Shawn Mendes, like, strumming to it.
His, like, baby Ed Sheeran take on it.
Oh, and I also thought, what if Ed Sheeran did Janet's Control album?
And he's amazing at all covers. Whenever he does, like, his kind of weird, unexpected covers, they're always incredible.
And what if, say, One Direction did Control? Because they would do a mean cover version of Let's Wait a While.
Or just Zayn.
Or just Zayn. The last one I thought of was Bruce Springsteen's Born in the USA. And I thought that could be really interesting if it was done by Beyonce for some reason. Like Beyonce doing Dancing in the Dark. Beyonce doing I'm on Fire. I mean, really, actually, Beyonce doing I'm on Fire would actually work. Yes. You don't even need to, like, re-envision it.
Yes.
Because it's like a slow-burning, kind of simmering, vibey song in ways.
Okay, I love all of those.
Great, let's make it happen.
All right, do you think I feel like mine are going to pale in comparison, but I'm going to tell you them anyway.
Okay.
One is kind of a cop-out. I'm starting with my cop-out.
Great.
Because I already had Ryan Adams on the brain, and the one thing I thought about when they first announced that he was going to do this 1989 album is I thought about his cover of Wonderwall by Oasis, which is an incredible song if you haven't heard it before.
Okay.
And Noel Gallagher, who wrote Wonderwall, he actually said when he heard Ryan Adams' version that that's what he wanted the song to sound like. He likes Ryan Adams' version better than Oasis's version.
Okay.
He would rather hear Ryan sing it than his own brother. I mean, that's probably a lot to do with the personal issues between those two.
Maybe.
But whatever.
Yeah.
So that just made me think, what if Ryan redid all of What's the Story, Morning Glory?
Okay.
Which is, I'm obsessed with Oasis.
I like the way you're sticking with Ryan Adams doing other stuff.
I figured we're on this track, might as well just keep with it. So I would love to hear the whole album done by him.
Okay.
And it would be amazing. That was my first one. The second one, I also kind of had Adele on the brain, but I went a little bit different direction. So the album is Robin. And
The one with the Dancing on My Own?
Yes.
Okay.
And the reason I thought of this is because the song Be Mine, she did a ballad version of it at this Nobel Peace Prize event.
Okay.
Robin did.
Right.
And it was this really, like, it just made you listen to the lyrics for the first time. Because a lot of times on dance songs, you don't pay attention to, like, the content of the lyrics.
Right.
And it's, like, a really, like, heartbreaking song, but set to this, like, really fast-paced beat, you, like, don't even pay attention to the lyrics. So I was thinking, at first I thought Adele, but then I was like, that's not a big enough shift. So then I thought, of course, the person that always is called the male Adele, Sam Smith, could take Robin's dance songs and, like, strip them all down and just sing these, like, heartbreaking lyrics as, like, the ballads that they could be.
Right.
That's my my last idea.
Wow, those are cool.
Well, awesome. Good.
Yeah. Well, we talked about how this album could hit the top 10 next week. We know it probably won't be number one because next week's number one album will probably be the new surprise Drake Future mixtape / collabo album that dropped out of the sky on Sunday after just one day's notice. It's called What a Time to Be Alive.
And what a time to be alive indeed.
What a time. What a time. It's set for a huge debut on the Billboard 200 chart. According to industry forecasters, it could do over 450,000 in overall units through this Thursday. So that means it's really only going to have, like, Sunday night, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, because normally most albums come out on Friday now, and this actually has a shortened week, so that's even more impressive. And of that figure, it could do, like, 425,000 in pure album sales. Both of those numbers will be the second biggest week of the year, next to only Drake's other surprise album. If you're reading this, it's too late, which came out in February. So that means, yes, the two biggest weeks of the year for an album will both be by Drake. Both are mixtapes. Both were surprise albums. So
that's it. That's the formula.
That's the formula. The new rule is,
aspiring artists, you just need to
have a mixtape that's a surprise album and
be Drake.
And be Drake. That's really the key. The key is to be Drake.
That's it.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, is this accelerated release pattern from Drake with these mixtapes that are kind of, like, elevated to albums, like proper albums, are they a way for him to sort of burn through his contract with Cash Money and Republic?
I mean, yeah, probably.
Probably, but we don't really know for sure.
But, I mean, I'm sure no one's, like, complaining.
Right, you know? Right. I mean, because, like, if you're reading this, It's Too Late, it's done, like, more than a million copies.
And, I mean, sometimes, like, when artists are angry with their, you know, labels or whatever, they put out a bad album just to get through.
Get out of it. Just, like, here, let me just get through this and, like, you know.
And then once I'm out of your contract, it's when I'll release the good stuff. But right. like, he clearly is not having that issue.
Right,
like,
no.
He's like, here, I'll just pump more good stuff out and we'll, you know, just keep making money together.
Meanwhile, on the Hot 100 chart, he actually hits the top 10 with his single Hotline Bling.
Mm-hmm.
It goes 16 to 9. It is his 14th top 10 hit. Hotline Bling is not on either of the albums we just talked about. It is a standalone single. I am rather unaware of the history of this song.
Well, there's a great Sam Smith cover that you can watch on Billboard.com if you'd like.
Oh, Sam Smith and Disclosure.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
They did a Hotline Bling cover. That was actually when I was introduced to the song.
Oh.
So maybe that also helped its rise.
Oh, I bet you.
Because it was a week ago. So.
I bet you some of the viral activity from that probably totally. Helped move the needle a little bit. Katie, do you know what was Drake's last top 10 single on the Hot 100?
Oh, wow.
It's a quiz for Katie.
Yeah, these always go so well. Last top 10 on the Hot 100. And is it, it's not from, if you're reading this, it's too late.
No, he didn't have any top 10s
from
that
album. All right, so, Baby, We're Going Home?
Yep.
Yeah.
Hold On, We're Going Home.
Hold On. I made up a new name, but you knew the gist.
That's the remix. went to number 4 in 2013. October 12th, 2013 was its peak week.
It's a great song.
At number 4. So, yeah. Yeah. Speaking of the Hot 100, The Weeknd replaces himself at number 1 as his evocative The Hills bumps his own Can't Feel My Face out of the top slot. It is the first time a man has replaced himself at number 1 since T.I. did it in 2008 with Whatever You Like and Live Your Life.
Both his own songs. I was going to guess that one of them was a feature. Nice work.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, there have been examples where an artist has done it where they were like a featured artist, like Puff Daddy did it when he was a featured artist.
Okay.
But he also did it when he was like a lead artist. In total, there have been 11 acts that have succeeded themselves at number 1. I will quickly tell you who the rest of them are.
I would love that.
I'm sure you're dying to know. Taylor Swift did it, actually, just last year with Blank Space, which followed Shake It Off.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so aside from Swift and The Weeknd, we also have The Beatles, which actually had 3 in a row.
Oh, wow.
Like, they replaced themselves with I Want to Hold Your Hand, She Loves You, and Can't Buy Me Love back in 1964.
Those are all pretty good songs.
Yeah. They're decent.
They're okay.
All right. And then it didn't happen again until 1994 when Boys to Men, and I think, I want to say it was I'll Make Love to You and then On Bended Knee.
Yeah, or I remember that.
It might have been On Bended Knee and then Water Runs Dry.
Those were good times.
You know, the era of, like, the R&B slow jam ballad, Girl.
Oh, yeah.
You know I done
I
screwed
love
up.
The spoken interludes were my favorite.
Every Boys to Men song was like, blah, da, 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 ba, da, 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 da.
Please come back home, girl.
You know I really screwed up. And, you know, I'm just sitting at home right now, and I just can't deal with it. I just wish you'd call me. Come back home, girl, please. Please, girl.
Remember to follow Keith on Twitter if you need one of these on your album.
If you'd like me to be the featured artist on your song, I'm available. Puff Daddy, back in 1997.
Who we just saw at the iHeart Radio.
Who I interviewed at iHeart, actually,
yep.
Yeah. Ja Rule, Nelly, mm-hmm. Outkast, Usher, T.I.,
mm-hmm.
and then the Black Eyed Peas.
Okay.
In 2009. So, yeah, there you go.
Elite Company.
Elite Company. Can you name the only other song with the word hills to reach the top 10 on the Hot 100?
The Sound of Music, The Hills Are Alive.
Nope.
That's not even the name of the song.
I think it's a band that you actually like.
Oh, really? Oh, well, then I need to
really
think on this. Hills.
There's another word in the title. It's not just hills. And it's the second word.
Oh, is it Weezer? Beverly Hills?
Yes.
Yay! It is a band I love, actually.
Congratulations.
Very nice.
Yeah, Beverly Hills by Weezer went to number 10 in 2005. That is the only other song with the word hills in the title
wow.
to reach the top 10. We've had a song. There was another song with Hill in the title, which you'll never get, so I'll just tell you. It was the theme to Hill Street Blues.
Oh, wow. I would.
Exactly.
Dun, dun, was it dun. Lauryn Hill's self-titled song, Lauryn Hill? No, I'm just joking. That's
I wouldn't
not
put that past Lauryn Hill to do a self-titled song. Let's see. God, we ran through all that stuff so quickly. Did we? Yeah, we did. We did. you know what we're going to do now is we're going to actually talk about our iHeart memories. This is not on Katie's script because Katie's like, it's not.
What will I do?
Oh, my God. How do we talk about
it? Do I just have to, like, actually recall memories of, you know, 2 days ago?
Yes, basically. So Katie and I were at the iHeart Radio Music Festival, which was this past weekend. It was on Friday and Saturday. We rolled in on Thursday night, and we left in the wee hours of Sunday. I have to say, it was pretty darn exciting.
Oh, yeah.
I was the person that did the, if you watch any of the video interviews on billboard.com/video.
You'll hear Keith's voice.
Occasionally.
Yes.
It's mostly cut so you don't hear my voice on purpose because that's the style of the videos. Sometimes you hear my voice pop in.
I did hear your voice in the Fall Out Boy interview when they were referring to themselves as being adult-ish.
Adult-ish. Yes.
Which I liked.
If you watch the Matt Bomer, I always pronounce his last name wrong. Bomer.
I think that's right. I think I'm the one that pronounces it wrong. I always say Matt Bomer.
I excitedly talked to Matt Bomer. Sorry, Matt. Who, of course, is a noted singer for his vocal abilities in the film Magic Mike 2.
Oh, yes.
Or Magic Mike XXL.
He covers not to be confused with Ryan Adams. Bryan Adams' Heaven, and it is heavenly.
Yes. And D'Angelo's How Does It Feel?
Yeah.
I believe.
In
yeah.
the big final scene.
Yes. Yes. Not that we've seen this movie.
I've heard.
So I was doing the video interviews, and Katie was next door in the press room talking to talent as they came through and spoke to the media in there. And also Katie helmed most of the stories that you saw on Billboard.com through the weekend. And we got to see a little bit of the show.
Yeah, Saturday, I tried to really get into the show more because it's really hard to cover something just seeing it on like a live feed. So
right.
I was really trying to be in there.
Yeah.
And the level of like superstar talent at this thing was kind of insane.
Yeah.
Many of which Keith then spoke to one-on-one. Jennifer Lopez.
Yeah, I talked to J-Lo.
I mean, yeah, J-Lo. Like, came back to our little studio.
I know.
Amazing.
It was ridiculous. Like, I talked to, God, I counted up how many interviews I did. And they're not actually all up on Billboard.com because we just couldn't. For some reason, we didn't have the bandwidth.
There were just too many good videos.
So all this content will show up somewhere.
Always in our hearts.
I did 41 interviews.
That's correct.
Yeah, and like 30-something of them exist in a video form on Billboard.com and on YouTube.
41 interviews over 2 days is completely insane.
Yeah, and among those were, as we said, Jennifer Lopez, Fall Out Boy, which we mentioned, talked to Demi Lovato. I always get her name wrong.
I think you're right the first time. Demi Lovato.
Demi. Mm-hmm. She should marry Matt Bomer.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Demi. Bomer. God. That's probably not going to happen. Matt's husband and his two children.
Would not care for that.
Yeah.
Wilmer Valderrama might not care for that either.
I think Matt has two children. Anyway, I digress. Who else did we talk to? We talked to
Jason Derulo. Trey Songz.
Big Sean. Puff Daddy.
Mm-hmm.
So many. Really, so many. Ryan Seacrest,
mm-hmm.
who I said we were talking. He was the out of all the people that I talked to, because I was telling my coworker Gary Trust about this. I was telling him, I said, you know, out of all the people I talked to, I only got sort of like kerfluffled like 1.5 times. And when I say kerfluffled, I mean like, you know, a little bit nervous,
mm-hmm.
because generally I don't like it. Doesn't like I'm not really fazed,
mm-hmm.
by doing these interviews. In the sense where I don't get, like, nervous.
You don't fanboy out over these people, yes.
Yeah, I mean, You're
just professional about
it. I'm still very, obviously, we're thrilled to speak to all of these acts, and it is a wonderful honor to speak to them. But at the same time, like, you know, I'm doing a job, and I want to make sure that I keep them comfortable, mm-hmm. and I'm not weird, and mm-hmm. whatever. and previously, like, when I talked to Kylie Minogue for the first time, I got a little kerfuffled.
Yeah.
And when I talked to Madonna for the first time, that was a little kerfluffly. I didn't come across, like, in the interview so much. And this one, with J-Lo, just because she's such, like, a diva in, like, you know, like, like lit up letters with stars around it.
That is an A-list superstar talent.
Yeah.
Actress, singer, just dancer, everything.
A true triple threat.
Yes.
That was kind of a kerfluffly moment, but you can't tell from the interview. It's fine.
That's good.
Like,
that's good.
But inside, I was just like, you had that moment where you're like, I'm talking to J-Lo.
But who really got you, Keith?
Who really got me? Duran Duran, actually. Who is actually our podcast guest this week.
Yes.
We did a God, I love that transition, Katie. You were so good. we talked to Duran Duran for a video interview backstage at iHeart. Because, you know, they're doing the rounds of promo because their new album, Paper Gods, came out a week and a half ago, and it just debuted in the top 10 on the Billboard 200 chart. It's their highest charting album in 22 years, their first top 10 album since 1993, believe it or not. So we got to speak with the band at iHeart. You can watch our video interview with them on Billboard.com or on our YouTube channel, of course. After our interview, we played our famed fishbowl game. Not quite sure how famed it is, where the band took turns picking questions out of a bowl and answered them. These were questions that I wrote and I came up with, some of which are tailored. See, get it? Wink, wink. Tailored.
Pun intended.
Pun. To the band themselves. Now, we had planned to do this game for 5 minutes. It didn't actually quite run for 5 minutes because we had to kind of move it along a little bit. But at the end of it, you'll hear when I say, oh, we kind of have to wrap up. And then all the band's just like, no. And they all start grabbing questions and start answering them.
Yes.
So they really...
they're in charge.
They're ultimately in charge of their own time. Anyway, here is our fun fishbowl game with Duran Duran at the iHeart Radio Music Festival. Oh yeah, oh yeah, it's time to take the pressure off. Everybody, everywhere, step out into the future. It's time to take the pressure off. Welcome, Duran Duran, to the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast. We are here with not just one member of Duran Duran, but all four members of Duran Duran. Nick Rhodes, Simon Le Bon, Roger Taylor, John Taylor. We are going to play a game.
Uh-oh.
It is the famous, okay. I know games are fun. It's the famous 15 questions in a fishbowl. It's not quite patented, but we're working on it. Each member will take a piece of paper, read it out loud, and answer the question. First up, it's Roger Taylor.
That's an interesting one. Do you have a favorite vacation spot?
They don't have to be very long answers. They can be short answers.
Got to be short answers?
Well, we have 5 minutes or less.
I think mine is a staycation, I think. I spend so much time traveling that I love to be at home.
Next up, Nick.
Well, let's have a look what we got.
Dun, dun, dun. These are customized to you.
Have you spoke to Grace Jones lately? I presume that means have you spoken to Grace Jones
That's
lately?
My terrible grammar, and I allegedly majored in journalism.
Well, I missed that little N there, but have I spoken to Grace Jones? I think the last time I spoke to Grace was probably about 6 months ago. And she was as charming and delightfully bizarre as always.
She's here at Hyde Park, by the way, when she played with Kylie. Next up, Simon. It was wonderful.
Okie dokie. My question is, describe your life right now in 3 words.
Your life.
My whole life.
Well, just right now. How's it going right now in three words?
Music. Excitement. Experimentation.
Like John?
It's like scary.
And see, the thing is, we go for 5 minutes until we're done with questions or the 5 minutes have happened.
Where do you keep your Grammy Awards?
You have two.
Yeah, I do. They're on my library. They're in my library.
Next.
By my desk.
Let's see, we're quick.
Another one.
We're moving on. 5 minutes.
Okay, 5 minutes to save the universe.
5 minutes.
What famous historical figure would you like to meet?
Well, obviously historical, they could be dead.
Yeah.
Duh.
Maybe Elvis Presley, I think. Because he was so important, wasn't he, in music?
If you were not in the band or playing music, what could you see yourself doing? What would I like to see myself doing, maybe is the question. Directing a movie.
All right.
That's nice.
Simon?
Not gardening this time then, Nick. What's your current favorite song that isn't your own? I'm a big fan of Tame Impala's song, 'Cause I'm a Man.
John?
Who do you admire?
Mm.
Me.
Simon, obviously.
Me.
Well, me. Yes, I do admire all these guys, actually. I do.
I think we've run out of time. We might have hit the 5-minute mark, but you know the...
Well, if we hadn't run out of time...
Well, you can keep going. Hey, no.
You should you never eat or drink before performing a show? You should never eat an entire pig before you perform.
What do you consider is the most surprising hit song of your career? No, none of them have been surprises.
Huge.
What was the first album you bought? The Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars.
Wonderful.
What was the last concert you saw?
U2.
Square Garden.
Yeah. Jimmy Fallon was there too. No.
Yes, he was. Okay. How many instruments can you play? And what are they? I can play. I can play guitar. I can play piano. I can play ocarina. I can play violin. I can play none of them very well.
Simon can play tons of instruments. Okay, thank you, you guys. Thank you so much, Duran Duran, for playing our little fishbowl Q&A game. But you know what? We're not actually done with the band yet.
We're not.
Oh, my God. If you watched our video interview with them, and I hope you did, they talked about working on their new album and also going on tour with Chic and Nile Rodgers. There was a little bit more of our interview that didn't make it into the video that I'd like to play for you guys. I also asked the band if they had any thoughts about Sam Smith joining them in the James Bond theme songs club, as Smith, of course, is recording the theme song to the new Spectre movie, and Duran Duran did the title song to A View to a Kill. The band's John Taylor talked about how, you know, you kind of have to go on this massive ride when you're part of the Bond family. And then Nick Rhodes talked a little bit about how, I'll let you hear it. So here's John Taylor and Nick Rhodes of Duran Duran talking a little bit about Bond and the world of Bond and Sam Smith and his new single.
Nightfall covers me, but you know...
They're great people to work with. I mean, Barbara Broccoli, they're a great team. You just take the ride. You know, the James Bond brand is massive and you just enjoy it.
Yeah.
It takes you to parts of the world you never... would go. I think we went to the premiere was in San Francisco.
Well, it was.
Not that we would never go to San Francisco, but I remember we were in City Hall, weren't we, for that?
I'm very much looking forward to hearing his song, actually.
Mm, yeah.
The last one, the Adele one, was back up to a good standard.
And now one more moment with Duran Duran, because I just can't let them go. I talked to them about how it was working with Nile Rodgers on the new album. I love Nile Rodgers. He's awesome. I've got to interview him a couple times now, and he's iconic. And he's on the new album, and he produced a couple songs on the new album, including the current single, Pressure Off, which features Janelle Monáe and Nile Rodgers.
Which we got to see James Corden lead a conga line through the arena for that song, and it was incredible.
And during their iHeart set, Duran Duran played Notorious, which was a song that was produced by Nile Rodgers, and they dedicated Notorious to Nile that day at the show because that was his birthday. So, actually, here's Duran Duran, Simon Le Bon, and his thoughts on working with Nile Rodgers.
When Niall comes into the studio, he leads by example. He picks up his guitar, starts playing, and everybody just wants to join in with him because he creates such a feeling of relaxed, funky energy that it pulls people into it. And you get, and you know, the first person to jump in was John, then Mark jumped in, and Roger started playing drums. And that kind of enthusiasm and joy that he has in making music is very infectious, and it's very inspiring too. So you come up with ideas pretty quickly when there's someone like that around.
Thanks again to Duran Duran for stopping by the podcast, and congratulations on the success of the new album. I'm really looking forward to seeing them at the Hollywood Bowl here in a few weeks. I think it's October 1st. I think it's a Thursday. They're playing with Chic and Clean Bandit.
That's going to be amazing.
Yes. And it's the first time that they're going to play like a full concert at the Hollywood Bowl. So I'm super stoked.
Yeah.
Chic. And if you haven't seen Chic live, they're amazing. It's almost time to go, unfortunately.
Oh, no.
I know. But before
But isn't there one last big thing that you need to do?
What's that last big thing, Katie?
Maybe Keith's chart stat of the week?
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Cue the music.
So my chart stat of the week this week is actually a quiz with Katie.
Oh, God.
I love doing this. I
forgot to look ahead on the script on this one.
The question is, and this is normally the chart stat of the week is about, you know, in this week in history, we did this. Or so-and-so got their first number one. I'm not going to do that this week. I'm going to do something where I'm just asking Katie, do you know?
Oh, no. God.
Who has the most top 10 singles on the Billboard Hot 100 Ooh. Chart? Now, you may be able to guess.
I was going to ask her one follow-up question, whether it was a older, like, classic artist or somebody who is still working today.
It's someone who's still working today.
But also a classic artist?
But also a classic artist.
Mariah Carey?
No.
Oh.
Mariah has 27 top 10 hits.
Whoa. So we're going higher than that.
Higher than that. I'll tell you, this person has 38 top 10 hits.
Oh, my Lord. Oh, my God. Okay. It's not Janet.
No, Janet actually has 27 top 10 hits.
Oh, she
as well.
Also has 27.
You know who else has 27? Ooh. Elton John.
Oh.
Yeah.
That would have been a good guess for me to have made, too.
Three divas together.
Okay, last one. Last question. Is it a band or an individual?
It's an individual.
Oh, it's an individual.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. 38. That's so many. I have nothing.
You have all the time in the world.
Well, but like, my mind is going like Michael Jackson and Elvis, which clearly you just told me this is a person who's working today.
Michael Jackson has 29. He has the third most.
Oh, man.
Now, I want to say there is an asterisk.
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 I got you.
Asterisk, Matt Bomer, Demi Lovato. I screwed up every week. the asterisk. Is the Hot 100 started in August of 1958.
Mm-hmm.
Many of Elvis Presley's big hit singles came before August of 1958.
Okay.
That is always like a big caveat when we talk about the Hot 100, because if the Hot 100 had started like 3 years earlier, Elvis would have perhaps the most, but no.
Okay, I just thought of a really obvious one. Madonna?
Madonna!
Yay!
Yeah!
Took me a while. I should have considered who was asking me this question.
I know. If Jason were here, this game
would
have been over.
The first thing would have just been like, Madonna.
Madonna, we're moving on, Keith.
Was it Madonna?
Can you guess how many top 10 hits she's had?
Well, you already told me.
Oh, 38.
So yes, I can. I could have sounded really smart if I just said that. Was it 38?
You're in fact, I don't even have to guess, Keith. So yeah, Madonna has the most top 10 hits with 38. Her last top 10 hit, or her most recent top 10 hit, was Give Me All Your Lovin' with Nicki Minaj and M.I.A. Her first top 10 hit was, I believe, Borderline.
Okay.
And then,
gonna guess Lucky Star.
Then Lucky Star.
Okay.
And then her first number one was Like a Virgin.
Holiday. Oh, Like a Virgin.
Holiday was her first chart hit. It went to number 16.
Okay. First one on the charts.
Yeah, it was either Borderline or Lucky Star. I'm a bad Madonna fan that I don't actually know this. Oh, boy. The second most top 10 hits was The Beatles with 34.
Okay.
And then Michael Jackson is 29. He has the third most. Then after that, Stevie Wonder with 28. And then the three divas that we talked about, Elton, Janet, and Mariah with 27. And then coming up close is Rihanna with 26 top 10s.
Really?
And Rihanna also has, I think, I want to say like 13 number ones
wow.
or something ridiculous, which is, it's sort of nuts what Rihanna has achieved.
But yes.
Her
whole album a year thing really served her well.
Yeah, well, I mean, she also had some top 10 hits earlier this year with 4 or 5 Seconds. Wasn't that top 10? Yeah. Well, you know, I believe we've come to the end of this podcast.
Oh, man.
I'm like, you know, I believe I don't really have a good way to go out this week. You know, we'll be back next week. Jason will be here.
I was going to say, I might not be back next week.
Katie is a very busy lady. Right now, nothing is being posted on Billboard.com.
Yeah, no, if anything, if there are mistakes on Billboard.com right now, it's because I'm not working currently.
It's because the hamsters that are working the laptop computers in the other room, we're kidding, are spelling Demi Lovato and Matt Bomer wrong. And putting asterisks on everything. Katie, do you have any parting words?
I don't, other than thank you for, you know, allowing me to fill in the last few weeks. It's been really fun.
Did you want to pick a song for us to go out on?
Goodness. Well, can I pick a Ryan Adams Taylor Swift cover to go out on?
Sure.
That was such a hesitation.
Well, just because I'm just like, we will played a few of them earlier in the show, but why can't
but you
we
know what? One we didn't mention was the first single, the one that they released before the album, and that was his cover of Bad Blood. So maybe that would be a lovely song to go out on.
Let's go out on Ryan Adams' cover of Taylor Swift's Bad Blood. And thanks for listening, everyone.
Bye.
And baby, now we got bad blood. You know I used to be mad, though. So take a look at what